Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. One of the most storied leaders of the most storied special operations force in the U.S. military, the Navy SEALs, faces a court-martial next month on charges of war crimes. Platoon Chief Edward Gallagher is accused by some of his own men of shooting civilians and murdering a captured ISIS fighter. Gallagher resolutely denies the charges, and he is innocent until proven guilty, of course. He's also got his defenders, including on Capitol Hill. But Gallagher's story raises once again the question about ethics and the rules in warfare. This hour on Point, the case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher. And you can join us. Have you heard about Gallagher and his accusers? Soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marine, call us. What is your view on the rules of engagement? Have you seen ethical lapses on the battlefield and what to do about it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us first this hour from Colorado Springs, Colorado, is David Phillips, a Pulitzer Prize-winning national correspondent for The New York Times. Phillips covers veterans and the military. His story in The Times ran under the headline, Navy SEALs were warned against reporting their chief for war crimes. And we've got a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Dave Phillips, welcome to the program.
I'm happy to be with you.
So first of all, start off by telling us a little bit about Platoon Chief Gallagher himself. Who is he and why is he considered, you know, such a storied member of the Navy SEALs?
Well, this is what caught my attention when he was first arrested in September. He is a 20-year veteran of first the Marines and then the Navy. He rose through the ranks of the SEALs very quickly. He became a medic, a sniper, an explosives expert, a team leader, a trainer at BUDS, the notoriously tough SEALs training course. In a sense, he was a SEAL SEAL and had a long list of accolades and medals for, you know, heroic service overseas and cool-headed leadership. And so to have a person with that kind of resume and reputation suddenly arrested and accused of cold-blooded murder was stark. Mm. And I immediately wanted to know more.
So what more did you find? Because he was arrested, what, last year, right?
Yeah, it's September.
September of last year. Okay. And so he is being accused of having done specifically what?
Essentially, he and his platoon went over to Mosul, Iraq, during the time when Iraqi forces and the United States were trying to take back that city from ISIS. And their job was to help Iraqi special forces clear out the terrorists. Well, what his troops, the SEALs serving under him, say is that once they got there, he kind of went off the rails. He would shoot heavy machine guns and shoulder launched rockets into neighborhoods with no apparent targets. Even though he was the chief, which meant he's sort of the coach of the team and should have been at the back making plans, he insisted on spending much of his time up in a sniper nest where he would shoot at a rate, you know, many times higher than any of the actual snipers. He boasted about how many people he killed, including women. And there are specific allegations where SEALs saw him shoot people who they did not think fit the description of anyone who could be considered a legal target. We're talking about girls maybe about the age of 12 years old, old men, people that are unarmed. And the most up close and grisly account is that a wounded fighter was brought in after a firefight. The SEAL platoon was positioned behind the enemy lines, so they're not in any danger. And the Iraqi special forces brought in this captive who'd been wounded in the fight. He's an ISIS fighter who's maybe somewhere between 14 and 17 years old. And the SEAL team begins performing medical care on him, as is required by their rules of war. But then, according to the SEALs and what they told Navy investigators, Chief Gallagher came over and in the course of also helping to start giving medical care, he, without any explanation, pulled out a custom-made knife and stabbed this young captive in the neck and in the chest, killing him. After that, he gathered the rest of the platoon around and they took photos over the body, and the chief performed a reenlistment ceremony, meaning he raised his hand and pledged to another stint in the SEALs over the body.
Yeah. Well, I just want to reiterate that this is all of these are things that Gallagher is alleged to have done, right? His court-martial is next month. And we should reiterate that he, his lawyers, his family, members of Congress all vehemently deny the charges to the point where they say that that NCIS sort of cherry-picked evidence and maybe listened only selectively to, you know, in their view, disgruntled subordinates of Gallagher.
I think it's more than just being disgruntled. What they're saying is that there was a coordinated collusion to lie to intentionally get this guy removed from leadership. What they say is that Chief Gallagher was such a tough dude. He was such a demanding leader that these guys under him couldn't hack it. And rather than admit their feelings, their failings, they concocted a plan to accuse him of crime so that he would be removed.
Mm. Well, I mean, we even have we reached out to members of his family and Sean Gallagher, Edward Gallagher's brother, sent us an email. He sent the same email to you. I mean, the specificity of why they reject the charges is pretty significant. I mean, Sean Gallagher, the brother, says that no one witnessed Eddie shoot a girl or a man. They say the family says that three times as many eyewitnesses attest to the fact that attest to the Eddie not having stabbed that young ISIS fighter. They also say that prosecutors and investigators have been caught withholding exculpatory evidence. So there's a lot of confusion and disparate views around what specifically happened. And it's going all the way to members of Congress.
And in addition, you know, as a journalist and certainly I don't think that we should try to like get to the bottom of it and convict someone. Mm-hmm. But what caught my attention is, you know, here is an obvious schism within the SEALs. We don't know for sure what happened, and the best way to determine that is through the legal process. But we do know that other experienced SEALs, people with multiple combat deployments, and several of them saw something that they thought was worth speaking out about. And that's significant, especially in a culture of the SEALs that prizes a brotherhood and a kind of a silence, you know, sort of in the same way that many police forces do. So there was a high bar to speaking out. And I don't think it's easy to discount that.
Right. And so, Dave, let's explore that more, because you're right. Not only did they want to speak out while in theater, but as far as I understand, they continued to try to speak out even after their deployments were over. And we're not talking about one or two. It's what, six or seven at least?
Right. So, that was the most interesting thing for me when I started to get into this case. I was able to get my hands on almost 500 pages of internal investigation documents. That was interviews with SEALs who had been witnesses. It was also hundreds of text messages from Chief Gallagher's cell phone that was seized when he was arrested. What I saw was not just these really gripping and shocking descriptions of killing in Iraq, but a platoon that appeared to be united in its disdain of these actions, and that was trying to report it repeatedly, but didn't. Let me give you an example. The night that Chief Gallagher allegedly stabbed this captive, the whole platoon got together and had a meeting, and they said, are we okay with this? No, this is according to the documents. And according to the documents, they said, listen, we've got to make a plan to keep him away from anyone else he could harm. And they told investigators that they spent much of the rest of the tour trying to keep Eddie Gallagher from killing other people. The snipers told investigators that they would shoot all sorts of warning shots to keep civilians out of the streets so that there wasn't a target for their chief. Now, when they made they were all on board that they were not okay with this. They told investigators, and they told first their platoon leader, the lieutenant in charge, and then his boss. And in both cases, even though they went to them, they say repeatedly, they were told to decompress or not worry about it. They were told it was being worked on, but eventually discovered that nothing was being done. it seemed to them, and as a reader, it seemed to me that the chain of command really was reluctant to do anything about this.
Well, were they even told that they would put their own careers as Navy SEALs at risk?
There's one telling meeting after almost a year of the platoon trying to report this and getting increasingly frustrated that they didn't see anything happening. They called a meeting with the officer in charge of their troop and his right-hand man, a senior enlisted man. And they laid out all of the allegations just as I have to you today. And according to the documents, the leadership responded by warning them, hey, if you go forward with this, it could ruin your careers. It could take out a lot of other SEALs. You know, the damage of this, of opening this can of worms, could be serious. And the SEALs in the platoon tell investigators that they came away from it thinking the message was, stop talking about it.
So I guess this is one of the things about this case. Again, to your point, not litigating it on the air, but exploring what seems to be, I mean, is this cracking open the door on, I don't know, a culture of secrecy, of protectionism? How would you describe that?
That is how I would probably describe it. And I don't think we should be surprised. I think there's a natural tendency in any organization to try to avoid outside scrutiny, you know, for fear that they will be misunderstood. You look at big universities and how they deal with sexual assault. You look at the Catholic Church and how it's dealt with molestation accusations. They try to deal with it inside. Now, turn that up a couple notches by going overseas where you are a professional who is legally killing people. You don't want to be misjudged. And so there's a huge urge to keep this inside where outsiders can't meddle with it.
Well, we are talking about the case of Navy SEAL Platoon Chief Edward Gallagher. Dave Phillips joins us. He's a reporter for the New York Times. When we come back, we'll hear from a former Navy SEAL and also from a professor at the Naval Postgraduate School who teaches the ethics of warfare to SEALs. So we'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher. He faces court-martial next month for alleged war crimes committed in Iraq. It's a complicated case, but it also breaks open the question about ethics in the field of battle and amongst America's most elite warriors. Dave Phillips joins us today. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning national correspondent for the New York Times. He has covered this story extensively, and we have links to his reporting at onpointradio.org. And, of course, we should once again reiterate that Platoon Chief Gallagher denies all the charges against him, as does his lawyer, certain members of Congress, and his family as well. So here's Andrea Gallagher, Chief Gallagher's wife. She told Fox and Friends last year that the government is committing, in her view, quote, atrocities against her husband, saying that she claims that the government is depriving him of a fair trial. And she called on the president to come to Gallagher's support.
We have to, you know, really look and wake up here as to what is going on in our country. These are atrocities being committed against our military service members, my children, my family, my husband. I would love to see the president take a good hard look at the systemic failure in all four branches of the military.
That's Andrea Gallagher. And we should note that a few weeks ago, President Trump did order that Gallagher be removed from a Navy brig. He's now confined to barracks as he awaits court-martial. Let's go to Brian, who's calling from Statesboro, Georgia. Brian, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me. My biggest comment that I would have is the fact that it's been so publicized about what's happened to him. I feel like me and my prior services, both with the active duty Army and the Army National Guard, to multiple deployments to both Iraq and Afghanistan. War is very difficult. It is very hard. It's very hard for people to understand that have not been there. And I feel like most of the people that make the judgments about what they assume happened so rapidly, especially on social media and within the news, have zero idea about what it's like to be there. You know, the things that are asked of our soldiers is very difficult. And now if, say, you know, this guy gets a fair trial, that's what anybody could ask for. Mm. But to assume that there's systemic issues within the Navy SEALs or within all these other departments of the military based on this one thing is, that's what I have an issue with.
Yeah.
That's not the case. There are issues constantly within everybody's workplace, probably even within that radio station. There are issues with individuals. To make this a soapbox that people can stand on to say that there's issues with an entire historied group like the Navy SEALs or any other group of elite yeah. soldiers or basic regular soldiers anyway, is that's just not fair to everything everyone else has right. done ever.
Well, Brian, thank yeah. you. Brian, thank you so much for your call. Dave Phillips, would you just want to respond to Brian?
I think that there's something that Brian said that's really important, and that's that we often make snap judgments based on combat or not experiencing combat, which is really hard to understand if you haven't been there. And that's why in some of these cases, I think that it's really important to rely on the judgment of the warfighters themselves. You know, obviously, there is a significant number of people in this platoon, people who have a very sophisticated idea of how difficult combat can be, who looked at this and saw something they didn't like.
Mm. Well, Dave, hang on here for just a second, because I want to bring into the conversation Ed Heiner. He's joining us from San Diego. He's a former Navy SEAL, retired after 20 years with the SEALs at the rank of lieutenant commander. He's visited Ed Gallagher in the brig. By the way, as I said, Gallagher's no longer in the brig, but and has become a friend of his. And Ed Heiner is also author of First, Fast, and Fearless. Ed Heiner, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first of all, tell us, you visited Gallagher. What's your view about the current situation or the fact that he's facing trial?
Well, it's a surprise to all of us that this is going on. Up front, I want to say, because I'm listening to your show, is, Navy SEALs aren't steely-eyed killing machines like a lot of people, often think we are. We live by a very tight ethos of, stewards of society. So Eddie has done that. He's on his eighth combat deployment when in Mosul, so he's done a lot for this nation, and I think the treatment was remarkably horrible, if you will. The confinement, the pretrial confinement with convicted sex offenders was... I don't know the justification. I know that some of the text messages and some of the things they've heard, but it's, all these allegations, it reads almost like a Stephen King novel. Hmm. And a lot of people don't understand it. There's started off with a couple of accusers, because in the field of battle, a couple of new guys were accused from Chief Gallagher that they were for cowardice actions. And in the SEAL teams, if you're accused of that, it's worse than death. So do they have a motive to make up stories? Of course they do. That is the worst allegation you can have against a SEAL, is that you didn't have the stomach to fight. So these guys, it's one of those things, it sounds to me, and I wasn't there, and I'm not claiming I know anything other than what I've heard and seen from people that were, is that it just started off as a little snowball, and it got really big. And NCIS manipulated statements. One of the accusers, you don't know this, one of the accusers, to my understanding, has since been found guilty of non-judicial punishment for lying and making false statements. Now, that's ironic. And that was in a totally different, separate instance. So it says a little bit about the character of the accusers. Mm. So I it's unfortunate. I mean, Duncan Hunter, Congressman Duncan Hunter, was visiting the same day I was. He watched the actual GoPro video of the wounded terrorist.
Yeah.
And he came out and doubled down. He watched it and said, Eddie did not kill that guy. And they don't talk about this in the papers, that Eddie's what's called an 18 Delta. He's basically a battlefield surgeon, higher than a paramedic. Mm-hmm. So he can do surgery on people.
Oh, Ed Heiner, hang on here for just a second. Your phone line got a little wobbly there.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Yeah, it's all right. But Dave Phillips, let me just turn back to you because have you been able to speak in the course of your reporting, Dave, to some of the accusers? And if so, I don't know if you have a response to what Ed Heiner just said about them.
So this is Ed. Thank you for being on to talk about this. And this is certainly a challenge in our reporting. Yeah, the Navy SEALs don't typically talk to reporters and definitely don't talk to reporters when there's a criminal investigation going on. So we were able to get, you know, glean some of the facts and what they had said through these investigation reports. But what he's saying is right. There's a lot that we don't know. I would like to correct one thing. Ed, you called these guys new guys. My understanding is that all of the guys involved were on their third deployment and their master chief had when the investigators came asking about him, said that they were highly respected. So you are correct in characterizing that there was a big disagreement between the chief and these guys over tactics.
Can I comment on that?
Because please.
There's never been a deployment that I've been on that we didn't have some discussion over tactics. In 2006, I was in Ramadi, and I got called to headquarters, which Ramadi, Iraq, is just west of Fallujah. I got called to headquarters in Baghdad to discuss the ever-changing tactics of what we were doing. Because if you know, you probably reported on this, that before 05, 06, Navy SEALs were just doing unilateral direct action missions, meaning at night we raided buildings and got bad guys. And then we started getting into the combat advising, what Eddie was doing in Mosul, and that was uncharted territory for us. So our tactics were developing overnight, and not everyone agreed on the same risk level because we started going out during the day. We started taking Iraqis with us. We started doing things that were not normal for SEALs. So we all debated it, and I'm sure Eddie's, you know, platoon in Mosul were debating how much risk to take. He brought everyone home, so obviously he didn't take too much.
Dave Phillips? So,
I agree exactly with what you're saying. What we see in the documents is there was a big debate in tactics. I think a lot of the guys thought he was reckless. And obviously, Eddie Gallagher, from what his wife has told me, did not agree with that at all. He is a very aggressive person. I think he was respected and awarded for being aggressive. So all of the accusations are swimming in this larger pool of discord where people were definitely not getting along. I think that the Master Chief said there was, quote, a lot of hate and discontent in that platoon.
Right. And you can imagine the level of stress. I mean, Mosul was medieval fighting. People's heads were on stakes. People got it raped. It was a rape and pillage environment. And so the intensity of the stress obviously adds to a lot of that. But I mean, also, this is what no one is really talking about. And I was a training officer before I left the SEAL teams for all training, basic and advanced education. And is the first two traits Navy SEALs have to have is physical and moral courage. They both are equally weighted. If you don't have the moral courage, if you see something and you don't stop it, that is, you are failing as a Navy SEAL. So if we have people downrange saying he's doing these things and they didn't stop it, that is enough to get rid of them. Yeah. You have, it's your moral obligation. So I don't.
You raise a really disturbing possibility, though. You know, there is either the moral failing on the part of a chief, or there's a moral failing on the part of, you know, maybe a half dozen guys who concocted a crazy scheme, and either of them is kind of mind-boggling to accept.
Well, you read in there the stories, and it talks about you know, civilians and all. He's shooting at civilians. Everyone's a civilian. None of them wear a uniform. They don't come out and pose in their camis to get shot at. You have to see, when you're a sniper, and we went through this, and I've had a lot of sniper missions where you have to look for a hostile action or hostile intent. And that is a very hard thing. Discretion, it's hard. And you're never 100%, I'm sure. And so to come back home a year later and battle it over saying he shot at this person is just absurd. It's absurd to us.
Well, Ed,
because you can keep adding to that story. Hell, he can say he killed 100 civilians. I don't know. Doesn't make it true.
Ed, what are you hearing from other SEALs in the teams?
Well, I can tell you, 100% positive on Eddie's side. Because now they're kind of circulating the inside information a little bit, and yeah, it's it's not divided, the SEAL teams. I mean, the headquarters building has to kind of stay shut down as they have to. And the Commodore, which you mentioned, you know, Matt Rosenblum's a 25-year friend of mine. I know him. I have the most respect for him as an operator. He's the most qualified officer I know. But guys in the SEAL team are back in Eddie, and they're hearing what actually went on. They're hearing the real rumor mill. So,
yeah,
and I can't repeat a lot of it. It's not my place. This court will probably, you know, bring this out.
Well, we want to, Ed, if I can just jump in here, I just want to jump in here and say, totally agree with you. We don't want to perpetuate a rumor mill here online, and we do want the court martial process and the naval criminal justice system to take its own course. So, Ed Heiner, I really appreciate you joining us today. I know I've got to let you go, and I want to get some callers in here as well. So I just want to say thank you again, Ed Heiner, former Navy SEAL, joining us from San Diego today. Much appreciated that you joined us.
Thank you very much.
I want to actually go to Alex now, who is calling from Novi, Michigan. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks so much. I wanted to kind of speak about the culture within the military. So I'm a first-class petty officer in the Navy Reserves. I've had active duty experience. I've traveled the world, and I've seen a lot of different aspects of at least the Navy's culture. And I had my own personal experience where I noticed some sexual harassment within the office going on. And when I went to report it, the person who I actually worked directly under that I had to report it to, he looked at me and he said, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And so for the accusers of Chief Petty Officer Gallagher, I understand that they're really in a bind and they're really in that period where they're second-guessing themselves, but they're very confident in their report. So it's really hard to tell sometimes when you don't have the information, when you don't have all the facts, and when everything is kind of political. So I'm really interested to see how this all plays out. But the culture of silence is everywhere, and it's important to remember here that when you have a commanding officer who is overseeing some of these allegations, they also have a great deal of influence outside of the command. And we see that with the recent incidences of the collisions of the ships outside of Japan. The Pentagon made comments about who was at fault, whether it was the commanding officer. And so those investigations kind of unraveled, and we saw the charges drop. And so the influence from senior command leadership, whether it's the Pentagon, maybe even the president, your local command, it's really important to know that the people who are stepping forward, they're not doing so lightly.
Yeah.
And it's a critical thing to remember, because I think it's more dynamic when you're in the military, because we have that brothership, we have that sisterhood within our group. You know, you don't want to seem to be the one to, but the commands definitely have.
Alex, thank you so much for your call there. Dave Phillips, so Alex, saying from firsthand experience, he is concerned about a culture of silence in the Navy.
Well, there is certainly – the Navy SEALs see themselves as something other and apart from the larger Navy. And I think that there is some concern within the group of ever letting an investigation get out from the SEAL teams to the Navy, because you're not sure what would happen. And I think that there is a fear there that they will be misjudged or hastily judged by people that don't understand their profession. At the same time, if that's taken too far, there's a lack of accountability can happen. And within the investigative documents that we saw, there was definitely, you know, repeated mention of trying to avoid a formal investigation, or putting it off or sidetracking it. And I think that people, whatever they made of the accusations, were worried about how this train would leave the station.
Well, you know, I'm just going to take a quick break in a minute here. But before I do that, I want to let folks know that we're going to be talking when we come back with a professor at the Naval Postgraduate School who teaches the ethics of warfare to Navy SEALs. And we've got a lot of comments coming in online as well. Lorian Kelly Lowe says, "It takes a great deal of personal honor and strength of character to buck the system and one's colleagues to report alleged wrongdoing like this." And John Drake says, "There's a definite need for some sort of DOD whistleblower hotline, which actually protects persons reporting. Interesting. So we'll explore all those things when we come back. We are talking about the complicated case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the complicated case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher. He has been accused of committing alleged war crimes in Iraq. He faces court-martial next month. Those allegations include allegations that he killed a 15-year-old ISIS fighter after that fighter had been captured. Edward Gallagher denies the charges. He's got a lot of supporters, of course, in his family, other members of the military, and on Capitol Hill. Here's Republican Representative Duncan Hunter of California speaking to the cable channel One America News Network last month. And Duncan Hunter really ran to the defense of Gallagher.
You have a Navy SEAL warfighter chief with 19 years, over eight tours in combat, combat decorated, who's in jail on murder charges for killing a terrorist that we tried to kill.
That's Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter. We're joined this hour by Dave Phillips, Pulitzer Prize-winning national correspondent for the New York Times. He's written extensively about the case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher. And joining us now as well from Monterey, California, is Bradley Strasser. He's a professor of philosophy at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. He teaches the ethics of warfare to Navy SEALs and other Special Forces soldiers. He's also a consultant on ethics education to senior leadership at Special Operations Command. Bradley Strasser, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
So this is a very complicated case, and I'm just wondering, can you help us understand what's really going on here? I mean, are there concerns about ethical gaps in the training or duty of the most elite warriors in the United States military?
Yes and no. I mean, the special operations community are incredible professionals. They do an unbelievable job. The demands that we put on them, the things that we ask them to do, that we've really been asking them to do continuously for the past 19 years of continuous warfare in this country, are extreme. And of course, as a result, the ethical challenges are also extreme. They do a tremendous job, I think, committing to ethics education and ethical training across the branch and across the forces. But, of course, I mean, we should expect that there's going to be incredibly difficult cases like this. And every time one of these kind of ethics scandals come up, I have to tell you, I mean, it's devastating to this community the same way a casualty would be devastating, right? The same way losing one of their own would be, precisely because of the way that they understand and view their jobs and their mission. They are warriors. They are incredible warriors.
Yeah.
They're the best in the world. But they're absolutely just warriors, or at least they hold themselves to be. That is to say, moral warriors. They do kill, of course, but they want to kill the right way. They want to wage warfare the right way, and they strive to do that. And when a case like this comes out, I have to agree with what you said earlier. We have to stress that this case is ongoing. We really have to let the rule of law play out and the legal process play out. I really think it's dangerous to, frankly, politicize this culturally. I think we should discuss that as well. But however these cases play out, every time there's these kind of ethical scandals, I mean, the community is devastated. I was just down in Tampa, Florida, a couple weeks ago, talking with SOCOM commanders, and they're just heartbroken. They're crushed by the scandal itself, right, by the difficulties within the culture, both of this tension between loyalty to one another, which, of course, is a good thing, right, Meghna? Mm-hmm. Loyalty is a virtue, and especially in these units, you're going to have extreme loyalty to one another and to the unit and to the team, but also the virtue of truth-telling. Right,
right.
And having the moral courage to speak up. That tension is going to be at the core of any one of these organizations, and any complex organization has that moral tension at its core. But when these scandals come out in the way that it dishonors really the incredible work of all of these men and women across SOCOM, it's just devastating because it really, it unfortunately perpetuates a false narrative that that the special operators are kind of off the reservation or doing their own thing.
Yeah.
That's a lie that needs to be put to bed. And that's why these scandals really are so devastating to the community.
Well, so just on your point of loyalty, we have a comment from on our website from someone calling themselves Gregors who says, of course there is some secrecy between soldiers whose utmost allegiance is understandably to one another, considering what they go through together. There must be. And then Gregors goes on to say, which is what makes this breach of that secrecy very significant. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't want to speak on the particulars of the case. I mean, I think that there is tremendous loyalty, and I think sometimes you do see a kind of a closing of the ranks. In the past, we've seen this with certain scandals across the SOCOM community where when someone speaks up and has the moral courage to do that, others kind of close ranks around them. I have to admit, I worry that your previous guest, Ed, is doing some of that. On the one hand, he says innocent until proven guilty, and we have to let the court case play out, which I couldn't agree with more. But then he also claims that NCIS manipulated evidence, and he claims that 100% of the SEALs are backing Eddie. But that's all. So that's just as problematic on that side as well.
Yeah.
Right? We need to have a loyalty, and I think the SEALs have a tremendous loyalty to one another, but they also have a loyalty to behaving ethically and morally and being quiet professionals who will let the law case here play out as it should.
Yeah.
And just as much as we need to honor, frankly, Eddie's 19 years of service and respect that he's innocent until proven guilty, we need to honor those men who spoke up as well and their service.
Well, Bradley Strasser, can I just jump in here for a second? Because I do want to step away from the specifics of Edward Gallagher's case here because, again, we just must reiterate over and over again, he's facing court-martial next month. The facts will play out as they will in the course of his trial. So I just want to step away from that for a moment because I want to lean on your expertise and position as, you know, you consult on ethics education to senior leadership at Special Operations Command. You teach the ethics of warfare to Navy SEALs. So let me just run this bit of tape by you. This is Assistant Defense Secretary for Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict. This is Owen West speaking before the Senate Armed Services Committee in February. Now, he said in February that the country's special operations units are in good form and good shape and getting even better at fighting new enemies and new kinds of conflict. But then West went on to say this. He worried that there needs to be even more ethics training.
Despite this clear progress, General Thomas and I are concerned about serious ethical failings by some members of our SOF community. These incidents have our full attention. They are totally unacceptable and do not reflect the true nature of the SOF professional.
That's Assistant Secretary, Defense Secretary for Special Operations, Owen West, there, referring to the Special Operations Forces. So, Bradley Strasser, what is he talking about?
Yeah, well, he's absolutely right. He's referencing there General Thomas, the outgoing former SOCOM commander, now the SOCOM commander is General Clark. But what General Thomas did in response to a handful of scandals, really, across the special operations community was he sent out it was really fascinating. He sent out a memo to all special operations officers across the entire SOCOM and said, look, we need a call to action here to kind of get back to the core roots of the ethical foundation of why we do what we do in the first place, right? Of why we serve and why we are the tip of the spear, not because we want to go and kill and be some kind of bloodthirsty warriors, but because we want to be on the side of what is good and what is right, and that's why they want to serve. And so he sort of tried to motivate this across the entire force. I thought it was an impressive act of leadership on his part, actually, to make that call. But I think what Owen's referencing there and what several leaders have just recently spoke out about is that they need to maybe reinvest and double down on kind of a consistent, coherent ethics education across the entire career of a special operator. So, you know, these guys get incredible amounts of training, right? Everybody knows, everyone listening, Magna, you certainly know that the rigorous training that, for example, the SEALs get, not just at BUDS, but across their entire career, it's unparalleled. But there also needs to be an equal commitment to their human capacity of their ethical training. Because what we're asking them to do is just, it's borderline impossible, right? We're asking them on stacked upon stacked deployments to continuously keep going back there, to keep fighting these incredibly difficult wars in vague operations, in the fog of war, in difficult circumstances, and yet do it with the highest standards of proportionality, of discrimination, of carefully following the rules of warfare, the laws of armed conflict, and the strictures of just war theory.
Yeah.
And it's an impossible task. And so we need to invest not only in the training of these basically human weapon systems that we already do, In terms of their ability to fight war, but just as much we need to invest in their ethics training as well. And we do that, but really what you're hearing right now from senior leaderships is that we need to redouble these efforts and just do more and do it better.
Well,
and
I think
their commitment to it is incredible.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I just wanted to turn back to Dave Phillips here because he's been listening quite patiently. So, Dave, what do you think about what Bradley Strasser's saying regarding the continuous need for ethical training?
Brad, thanks for everything that you've said. I agree with it, and I like the subtlety and how you laid out the tension. I have a question about what have your conversations been like with senior leadership about this subculture within the SEALs that does things like, I'll call it the pirate subculture, that does things like carry custom-made hatchets while they're overseas. So in Eddie Gallagher's text messages, he texts one of his Navy SEAL friends before he deploys, and he says, thanks for the hatchet. I can't wait to bury it in somebody's skull. And I think that there is not a majority of the SEALs that feel that way, but certainly a proud subset who feel they are the real warriors who really want to bring the fight and maybe don't look too kindly on the ethics redux that's happening. And I wonder what the leadership conversation is like about what do you do about that part of the SEALs?
Yeah, I don't want to speak on the physics of Eddie's case. I mean, it's going to trial. But the broader kind of subculture that you worry about, this sometimes called the pirate culture, right? This idea that, you know, they're more interested really in killing than in doing things the right way. I agree, first of all, it's a minority, but I agree that there's, you know, sometimes you have that subculture emerge. And again, we shouldn't be totally shocked by this, right? These are men that we do send over as the tip of the spear. And also I should mention that the special operations community over the past 19 years has borne the tremendous brunt of not just combat operations, but also casualties. I mean, we've been a nation at continuous war for 19 years, and we've asked this very small slice of our population to bear the entire burdens of this. And so those kinds of things, unfortunately, are going to be a challenge that the organization faces. Now, that said, I think that there's this sort of false narrative out there. I call it kind of a Hollywood, you know, narrative. Think of like Jack Nicholson's character in A Few Good Men, right? This idea that, oh, we need to have, you know, tough men that go and do what they need to do, you know, you kind of do what you need to do, and whether or not it's outside the bounds of law or not, you just do what you have to do and get it done, and that's how we can sleep safe at night. I just got to say, I think that's nonsense, and I think the vast majority of SEALs would reject that, too. That's not who they are, and at their core, that's not who they are. And again, I don't want to speak to Eddie's case, but I will tell you that the senior leadership I speak to, and I know very well in the SEAL community, but also across the ranks, junior officers and senior enlisted, they reject that. That's not who they are. That's not. They wouldn't be a SEAL if that's who they thought the SEALs were.
Right. Well. So Bradley and Dave, hang on here for a second because we do actually have a lot of callers who've been waiting patiently, and I'm running out of time. So I want to at least get one more in here. Let's go to Kevin, who's calling from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello. How y'all doing?
All right, Kevin, go ahead.
I'm a prior service Marine, and something that I've noticed a lot in the military is once you pick up chief or once you're promoted to gunnery sergeant, in the Navy they even have something called the chief's mess, and it's this cabal might seem like a little bit of a sinister word, but, you know, these guys all have the goal of retiring at the end of the day. You know, they have joint interests, and a lot of times when you see misconduct on the part of, you know, senior enlisted, it looks very similar to a police brutality case inside of a police department where they close ranks and any admission of fault is going to bring much more scrutiny.
Yeah.
It's much easier for them. Go ahead.
Oh, no, Kevin, I just, if it's okay with you, I'm going to take that back from you because I've got 3 minutes left here and I want to get our guest to respond to what you're saying. So, Kevin, thank you for your call. Bradley Strasser, what do you think about what Kevin said?
Yeah, the courage to speak up in any organization is one of the hardest ethical challenges that leaders have. To try to foster that kind of culture that not only encourages that moral courage, but protects whistleblowers and makes people know that they are able to do that, especially in organizations that have the kind of complexities that our military faces. So that's not something new just for the military. It's every organization faces this. I think it's particularly challenging, especially in our special operations community, given the fierce loyalty that they need to have to one another. So it's just a uniquely, an extreme degree challenge, but it's a challenge that every single organization faces.
So Bradley Strasser and Dave Phillips, there's one particular thing that Ed Heiner said that I want to hear from both of you about. And Bradley, I'll start with you here. Because Ed talked about how the changing nature of the types of missions that the SEALs have been deployed on in places like Afghanistan, but especially in Iraq, that it's not necessarily the kind of mission that a SEAL wants to do, right? Where they tactically plan it, they practice it to perfection, they go in at night, and they do exactly what they're told to do, like a laser, that they were going out during the daytime more often and in situations that perhaps, you know, they didn't sign up for necessarily, to put it roughly. And then he said, they were in situations where everyone was a civilian. I'm just wondering how you train ethically for these new combat scenarios, which special operations more and more, as you've been saying for the past many years, have been faced with.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, Ed's right that the epistemic difficulties, that is, the fog of war and the nature of warfare in the contemporary environment is extreme, right? It's very hard often to know who is a legitimate combatant and who is not. And that careful ethical decision-making that we put on our soldiers, it's you can't understate the difficulty of that. That said, I have to completely respectfully disagree with that. Everyone is certainly not a civilian. A number of the people, of course, if everyone was a civilian, then you would have no targets.
Right.
And our warfighters know this, and our SEALs know this, and so what they're trained to do is try to interpret from the evidence that they have, and based on the rules of engagement that they have and that they've been given, what are the characteristics they need to determine someone is a combatant. Traditionally, in just war theory, that means somebody who is directly and actively posing a threat. Now, when you have an enemy who hides in plain sight and doesn't wear a uniform and tries to appear intentionally as a civilian, they try to use the laws of warfare that we try to follow against us, then that is incredibly challenging. But it doesn't mean that we can just therefore throw those rules out and say, well, gosh, everyone's a civilian. Who knows if I killed a civilian or not? No, they are incredibly judicious and careful to try to target only combatants, of course, because, again, they're trying to be moral, just warriors, not just some kind of bloodthirsty killers.
Yeah. Dave Phillips, we just got 30 seconds left to go. Your final thought here. How is this case rippling through, the special operations community?
I think no matter what happens, the men who came forward are going to face a very hard road because they have come against, try to confront this culture of silence, and in a way they're viewed as traitors to the Brotherhood.
Well, Dave Phillips, Pulitzer Prize-winning national correspondent for the New York Times, he's been covering the case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher, and we have links to his reporting at onpointradio.org. Thank you so much, Dave, for joining us.
Thanks.
And Bradley Strasser, professor of philosophy at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, teaches the ethics of warfare to Navy SEALs and other Special Forces soldiers, also a consultant on ethics education to senior leadership at Special Operations Command. Bradley Strasser, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.